podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur.
I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 anytime. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Punt Podcast. Good to have you with us. And what a huge week we have in the Premier League with a couple of colossal games on Sunday. One of those involves Manchester United, but is Jose Mourinho killing that football club? I will speak to the Independent's chief sports writer Jonathan Liu later about that in the podcast. Bets coming up from Pete Farris, Gav Puchlowski, Al Ross and Sam Norris. But first, the usual gruesome twosome. It's a warm welcome to Derek McGovern and William Hill's in-play football trading manager, Andy Excel, who are going to give their best bets, their verdicts on the Premier League games that are televised this weekend. A welcome back to Andy Excel, who missed the podcast last week, but is with me in the studio this week. Good morning to you, Andy.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Looking forward to the weekend?
Might be hiding behind the settee on Sunday. But
as you'll be well aware, Andy Excel, a big Arsenal fan, and they travel to the Etihad to take on Manchester City and could be shellacked this weekend. It's possible.
It's possible.
Derek, how are you, sir?
Yes, very well. I take issue with that gruesome twosome jibe. I thought that was the nickname of Lee Phelps.
Let's get stuck into this weekend then, chaps. We'll start with Stoke versus Leicester, which is televised on Saturday afternoon. 12:30 kick-off this one. Stoke are 6-4. The draw 23-10. Leicester City are 9-5. The enhanced odds, Jerdan Shaqiri to score and Stoke to win, was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 5-1. And Jamie Vardy to score and Leicester to win was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 7-2. Stoke City haven't managed back-to-back wins in the Premier League since January, with the first of their two wins back then coming against Watford. They beat Watford last weekend, which could be a decent omen for the home side. Andy, we'll give you first bite this weekend. How do you expect this one at the Bet365 Stadium to materialise?
The outsider of the three in the match betting is the draw, and that's the most likely outcome. It's the one that nobody ever backs, but it's the one I'd back here. I think it might be a score draw, but I'll stick with the draw in this one, I think.
23-10, the draw. If you're looking at the draw and both teams to score in the game, that's available at 3-1. And if you are checking out the goal scorer betting here with William Hill, Jamie Vardy 13-10 to score any time, scored in last week's 2-0 win against Everton. But he's also got three in his last four against Stoke as well. And I suppose last week's result, Derek, against Everton, where they won 2-0 Leicester, ridiculously at this stage of the season, you're left saying, yeah, but that's Everton. Everyone beats Everton.
I've been saying that for about 12 years, to be honest. I have to say, if ever you needed an excuse to stay in bed until 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and I don't, this one would be it, because I look at the six-year and you could give me 100 goals and I wouldn't be confident of picking a right result. It's a tough one. Whose was the better result last week? Was it Stoke in beating Watford or Leicester in beating Everton? It's probably Stoke, actually, given Watford were in fine form until then. But I liked Leicester's performance last week. I wouldn't go as far as to say it was getting back to their title-winning form, because you've got to factor in the poverty of the opposition. But it was Leicester at their best. And if there's going to be a winner, I would suggest it's going to be Claude Puel's men. I just think they were getting back to something approaching their best. And Stoke, you really don't know what you're going to get from Stoke. And I think even their manager, Mark Hughes, would say the same. I just can't get on the right side of them.
Do look at that headline offer then, the enhanced odds offer. Jamie Vardy to score and Leicester to win was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 7-2.
Just whilst we're talking your odds, I was actually looking at some stats for this game this morning for the statos out there. Both teams are towards the bottom of the table in terms of cards received and corners given for them.
Okay.
So if you're building your odds, go unders. Nothing's going to happen, which, as Derek says, it's a good day to go shopping.
West Ham versus Liverpool next up, chaps. Saturday, 5:30. The Hammers, 4-1 to win this game. The draw, 16-5. Liverpool, 8-13. Enhancements, Javier Hernandez to score. And West Ham to win was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 7-1. And if you fancy Roberto Firmino to score and Liverpool to win, that was 13-8. That's been enhanced to 7-4. Derek, I don't know if you watched Match of the Day last week, but what was Mikel Antonio doing last week?
It was shocking.
2-1 up with seconds left on the clock, away from home. The Hammers looking for their first win away in the Premier League at Crystal Palace. Just run the ball into the corner, man.
Well, it took me back to that night in 1989, I think it was, which I'm sure Andy will remember, the Arsenal-Liverpool game, when Arsenal won the title at Anfield, and John Barnes did exactly the same, not quite as criminally as Antonio did. But, you know, if you've got to think, every amateur footballer would know what to do there. And it was the cross as well, the apology for a cross. It was almost as if he was passing back to the goalkeeper. He's been torn to shreds by the West Ham fans this week, and I'd have to say rightly so.
Yeah, Chris Kirkland, who played with him at Sheffield Wednesday, has dubbed him, in inverted commas, not the brightest, which I think could be an understatement. Probably fair comment after last week. As for your side, Liverpool, Derek, they've won back-to-back games 3-0, admittedly midweek against Maribor and last weekend against Huddersfield. There was booing at Anfield last weekend at half-time, Derek. Is it a bit premature, that booing? I mean...
No, I was there and I led it. It was absolutely appalling that first half. It was as bad as anything I saw from Liverpool in the dark days of Roy Hodgson. It really was that bad. And you know what? Yeah, there's a lot of goodwill in the bank for Jurgen Klopp. Inexplicably in my eyes, because he doesn't seem to have done anything more than Brendan Rodgers did. But when a manager starts complaining about the fans, which he did in not so many words after the game, he's feeling the pressure. And there's a lot to be worried about at Liverpool right now. Earlier in the week, I looked at this fixture and Liverpool were 8-11. I fancied Liverpool to win it, to be honest, because, you know, on their day, they can tear apart any side, particularly West Ham. They're shortened to 8-13 now, and I don't understand why, because Coutinho's out, definitely now. And a player, the most underrated player at Anfield, Gini Wijnaldum, looks as though he's going to be out too. And I tell you what, Liverpool have really missed him when he's been missing. He was missing last week against whoever it was they beat in the end. I couldn't go for Liverpool 8-13. West Ham are 4-1. We know all about their problems, but they're a bit big, aren't they, to beat Liverpool at 4-1?
When you consider, Derek, as well, that Liverpool have conceded 15 goals away from home in the Premier League this season, which is more than any other team in the competition, that 4-1, Andy, could look a little on the large side. And taking what Derek says into account about missing Jorginho Wijnaldum and Philip Coutinho as well.
I think I definitely agree with the Wijnaldum comment. He is the underrated player in that team, and he does hold them together in a lot of senses. But I couldn't touch West Ham with a barge pole against my neighbour. It's just unbelievable. You talked about the Match of the Day piece, but the Monday Night Football piece on Sky by Carragher and Neville, where they absolutely destroyed not only Antonio, but the other three that haven't got the brains of a rocking horse and were stood there watching him do it. IU, Hernandez and Lanzini. They were all within 10 yards of him. And then they had nobody going the other way. It was incredible. I just think there's massive issues in that team. They're the oldest squad in the Premier League, West Ham, and they looked it. I think I could have run past some of them. I'm in a bit of a quandary now because of the Liverpool injuries. I think it is set up for a Liverpool win, though. Yeah, the price has probably gone now.
Maybe have a look at Liverpool to win the game and both teams to score in the match, which could be a bit of value at over 2-1, 11-5 on that.
Yeah, that might be worth a look.
And Derek, you're going with West Ham then?
Well, I wasn't going to earlier in the week, but I haven't watched Liverpool last weekend. And then again, only on TV in midweek. there are problems there. Without their flair men, the Manes, the Lallanas and Coutinhos, and now the Wijnaldums, I don't, you know, if you're Slaven Bilic for this game, okay, you're playing at home, but you're just gonna hope to play on the counter, because Liverpool just won't be able to break it down.
This week's European nap goes in the early kickoff in La Liga on Saturday. It's a midday kickoff. Valencia taking on Leganes, and Valencia have very much been the surprise package of La Liga this season. They've taken advantage of Real Madrid's slightly sluggish start and find themselves in second in the table, 4 points behind Barcelona at the top of the pile, but crucially 4 points clear of Real Madrid in behind them. It's been a superb start to the season for Valencia. They are unbeaten in the league and have won their last 7 games in all competition, and they've been winning some of those games really nicely as well. They put 6 past Real Betis a few weeks ago and thumped Sevilla by 4-0. I think they'll win again this weekend. They take on a Leganes side who, to be fair, haven't had a bad start to the season themselves. They are up in 4th place, but a bit of recent collateral form. They were beaten by Sevilla away from home when we last saw them. The fact that Valencia beat them on home soil just a few weeks before that, 4-0, suggests that Valencia very much got the upper hand over Leganes in this match. Leganes' away form hasn't been too bad, but they have tasted a couple of defeats in recent outings, and the majority of their victories away from home have come against sides in the lower echelons of the table. So I don't think Leganes are a terrible outfit, but Valencia should have more than enough to put them away. They're a short price on the outright betting, so I'll take the minus a goal at 29-20 as the European nap this week.
On to Sunday's games then. We'll start with Tottenham versus Crystal Palace at Wembley. Midday kickoff. Tottenham 1-4 to win this game. The draw 5-1. Crystal Palace 10-1. Enhanced odds. Christian Eriksen to score and Spurs to win was 29-20. That's been boosted to 7-4. And Wilfred Zaha to score and Crystal Palace to win was 18-1. That's been enhanced to 20-1. Spurs are now 16-1 for Champions League glory after dismantling Real Madrid on Wednesday night at Wembley. Dominating performance, that one, and a real coming-of-age performance, I think, for Dele Alli as well, Andy.
Well, yeah, he got the goals, but I think it was just an all-round really good team performance, and it's the second time they've done it against a Madrid team that you could argue are in trouble. They lost in the domestic league at the weekend when they shouldn't have done, and they just don't look like much of a team for Real Madrid. Now, that's going to sound like me taking things away from Tottenham as an Arsenal fan, and I'm not taking anything away from them. That's two great performances. But you just always wonder with this sort of game after that, and with picking up one or two injuries, could this be the after the Lord Mayor show? And I think Palace with Zaha, I'll come back to this later, he makes a huge difference to that team, and there are other players make huge differences to their team. I think they might get beat, Palace, but they might keep it within a goal. So if you want to look at the handicaps for Palace, that's where I'd be looking.
Yeah. The tie, Tottenham -1, Crystal Palace +1, which means if Tottenham win by 1, you get paid out. That's 3-1.
Yeah, that's the kind of area I'm looking at. Tottenham to win by a goal.
Spurs have a good recent record against Palace, as you would expect. They've won the last 4 Premier League games against their London rivals, and Palace have actually failed to score in any of their first 5 away Premier League games. But Andy makes a good point, Derek, about Wilfred Zaha. They've definitely got a lot more potency with him in the lineup.
Yeah, they have. You know, he's the main reason that for a while I was back in Palace away from home, you know, because on the break with him and him leading the breaks, there's always a chance. But those days ended as soon as they appointed Roy Hodgson as manager. I'm sorry. Man is 70 years old. He shouldn't be leading the Premier League team. He should be leading the post office queue. it's crazy. Why would they appoint? I haven't met a Palace fan who was happy with his appointment. I doubt many Palace players are. Remember when he took over at Liverpool? I think I might have mentioned this before, Dave. He made clear his first worry was that it would endanger his friendship with Fergie. This is Liverpool manager. His grasp of public relations is even worse than his pronunciation of it. The man is a clown, and I just can't have him at all. That's the reason. I mean, Andy's right to bring up the after the Lord Mayor show, or after the Madrid Mayor show, actually. They had the mayor that night. There is that. You know, the Tottenham fans and the players have been off for playing Real Madrid, and now with Palace visiting, oh, my God, do we have to get through this? But because it's Roy Hodgson in charge, because I've seen enough of Palace to know that they're crap, I'm going to go for Tottenham -1 at 8-11.
Very good. Let's move on to Manchester City versus Arsenal at the Etihad. 2:15 kickoff. And Manchester City 4-9 to win this. The draw 19-5 with Arsenal in the betting at 11-2. What's trending, hashtag your odds, by the way? I've just seen that on the William Hill website. Is that the same on the app as well?
The trending your odds is stuff you can bet on in play. So it's available in play as well.
Okay.
So it's whatever is trending at that time, basically. So you'll have a range of offers in play as well along those lines. And there's some out pre-match just as a taster, basically.
That's a word from Twitter, by the way, Derek, trending. That's a term from
Twitter.
You
know what? I was just about to say, trending an app you're using in the same sentence. I was just about to slam the phone down and discuss. Back your age, you two.
You want to ask Roy Hodgson about trending?
The enhanced odds here, by the way, Sergio Aguero to score in the game and Manchester City to win the match is available at 6-5 from 11-10, and Alexandre Lacazette to score and Arsenal to win was 13-2. That's been enhanced to 7-1. Derek, is this the best squad ever assembled in the Premier League? That's what some people are saying about Manchester City.
That's a good question, actually. It could be, actually. It could be. But, you know, they've spent enough money. So if it isn't, maybe it should be. You know, that's how much dust they've spent. They're playing brilliantly. And that result in midweek, you know, that was a tough place to go, wasn't it? And get a result like that. The fact that they're conceding goals still is a worry, I suppose. But, you know, you look at this fixture and it's not often this season you're going to get 4-9 about Man City. I'm tempted to absolutely lump on it. It's definitely what you call a Super Sunday, this, isn't it? Unless you're Arsenal. I don't think they'll be relishing going there. And you look and see, you know, I want to ask Andy about the two star players, or supposed star players, Mesut Ozil and Sanchez, who have done, in my eyes, have done absolutely nothing this season. In fact, in one game early this season, statistics show that Jeff Stelling covered more ground than Mesut Ozil. That's how bad he was. And the only thing less likely than Sanchez to be seen at the Emirates next season is a trophy. Those two players are stealing a living right now, in my eyes. And I just wonder, where are the Arsenal fans calling them out? They're calling the manager out, fair enough, but they're not calling those two players out. Why?
Well, I think Ozil has been called out over a long period of time for his lack of perceived effort. Which is not something you can generally point at Sanchez. Yeah, he's been less so this season, but that's from a very high bar. I loved the bloke when he first signed. I thought he changed the whole way Arsenal plays. But, yeah, his heart and his head seem to be going in a different direction at the moment.
There you go, Derek.
Yes, good answer. Good answer. But it doesn't get away from the fact that City are good things here at 4-9.
Manchester City, the pick for Derek. Do you think they'll cover a handicap then, Derek? If you're looking for a bit more value.
Yeah, I do. You know what? I've looked at Arsenal this season, and you know what you're saying is this, that City the best side that the Premier League have ever seen. This is quite possibly the worst Arsenal side the Premier League has seen. I look at them there. I look at the players they've got there, and I see nothing. I see nothing for any opposition to be scared of right now. I think this is going to be a cakewalk for City. It's 3-0 for me.
3-0 to Manchester City, available at 11-1. One stat that I love ahead of this game as well. Manchester City have scored 20 goals in their last 4 Premier League home games. That's more than 18 of the other 19 clubs in the league have scored in total in their 10 games in this season so far, which is amazing. The only team that scored more is Manchester United. They've got 23. Is this the worst Arsenal side you've seen in the Premier League?
It's difficult to say. I don't think so, actually. I mean, I have seen worse, but you'd have to go back quite a few years. But I think there's decent players there. They've just lost their way. And the thing that, if I'm clutching at a straw here, this might sound like this, but they do play better against the bigger teams. And they're rarely this price. I mean, Derek says City are rarely that price, and he's right. And I think City are an awesome team. But they're not the best squad. Well, they might be the best squad ever in the Premier League, but they're not the best starting 11. I'll cling to the Invincibles for that one. I think City will win, but I think both teams will score. So that's the angle I'd be looking at. There's been 22 goals in the last 6 games between the two teams. All 6 games, both teams scored. They're both better going forward than at the back, that's for sure. So City and both teams to score, and I'm just hoping it's not a lot of scores.
29-20, City to win the game, both teams to score in the match. To Stamford Bridge we head now, 4:30 kick-off on Sunday. Chelsea versus Manchester United, and Chelsea are 7-5. The draw is 11-5 with Manchester United 2-1. Enhanced odds, Alvaro Morata to score and Chelsea to win was 5-2. That's been enhanced to 11-4. And Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 100-30. And it's about time that man just mentioned, Lukaku, steps up in a huge game. He's only got 15 goals in 59 Premier League games against, in inverted commas, big six opposition. He needs to step forward in a match like this, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, that's the question over him, isn't it? He's, from an Arsenal fan point of view, everything that's being said of him is like what used to get said about Giroud, and look where Giroud ended up, sitting on the bench. So he has got to do it, and he's yet to. I mean, this game for me is, I just wrote down here, is dysfunctional against functional. You've got Chelsea just... The players, I'm not sure whether their minds, certainly on the Premier League, I think they think they're going to cruise through the group stages of the Champions League and then start trying. And half of them are already looking at what they're going to do in next year's World Cup rather than what they're going to do for Chelsea. So, whereas Man United, are the, as you said with Mourinho, is he killing them? Well, he's made them completely functional. They'll win a game, but you won't like watching it. So I actually think they'll win this game, but not prettily.
Manchester United to win 2-1. If you fancy Manchester United to win 1-0, like they did against Spurs last weekend, that's available at 7-1. Derek, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but their midweek performance against Roma when they were beaten 3-0, one of the clips from that match is on Twitter.
Yeah,
on their defending, set to the Benny Hill music.
It was unbelievable. I mean, it was just like you'd watch if you were a teacher looking out the window at the kids playing at break time, and you see they, you know, they're all chasing the ball, and it was comical. And if you're Conte, who did so when he was manager of Italy, defensively they were unbelievable. He surely can't believe what's going on there. These are professional, top level professional footballers. It was inexplicable. So there is definitely something wrong with Chelsea. But nobody seems to know what it is, least of all Conte. I can't possibly back United for this because they won't be looking for a win. Under Mourinho, they don't look for a win in games like this. They look for a 0-0. More often than not, they get it. I mean, being a United fan right now, it can't be much fun, can it? You know what? I've actually think, on balance, I'd rather be married to a lady poet than being a United fan right now, because you're going to be speaking to Jonathan Liu, I think I heard you say. I'll be interested to see what his answer is to, is he killing United? Because he is. And you know what? I love him for it.
What bet are you going for in this, Derek?
Draw.
Well done to Pete Farris. Two winning naps on the spin. Last week it was draw no bet derby. 6-4 the price there. And he's now closing in on being in profit. DK put up another winner, 10-11 shot, so he's got a comfy lead at the top of the Naps table now. No one else won, but in Naps news, the Euro boys, Sam and Alex, have resorted to having a competition between themselves. They're both losing. As for the rest of you, maybe try tipping something that you think will lose. See if that works.
The words of Lee Phelps ahead of the Naps this weekend.
Derek McGovern.
He is a charmer, isn't he?
Yeah, the gruesome twosome, there he is again.
Derek, do you want to lead us off this week?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I think this will win, and it will win, because I watched Huddersfield at Anfield last week. Now, no matter how bad Liverpool were, I've never seen a performance as bad as Huddersfield last week at Anfield. Honestly, I just don't know what they were trying to do. Even when they were 2-0 down, they didn't come out their half. It was unbelievable. West Brom are 2-1 to win at Huddersfield. It's just a ridiculous price. They will win.
2-1 for the Baggies and the XL.
He surprised me because I thought he was going to steal the one I wanted, but he's left it there for me.
Burnley.
Burnley at Southampton.
Yeah.
I think they're a decent side away from home. That's where they tend to set up to win. And again, we've talked about Southampton. Odds on every week at home. They're about the same price whoever they play, it seems. But I think Burnley might just nick a win there.
9-2 Burnley. I'm going with what I think is the stick-on draw of the weekend. Brighton to get a point at Swansea is the one that I like the look of. 21-10 on the draw in that game is my nap. So the punt treble this weekend, West Brom at 2-1, Burnley at 9-2, And the draw, Swansea versus Brighton at 21-10, just over 50-1.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now it's a delight to welcome onto the podcast the chief sports writer for The Independent. Jonathan Liu joins us on the line, myself and Derek. First of all, a warm welcome, a good afternoon to you, Jonathan.
Hi, Dave. How's it going?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Late night at Wembley, but a great night as well.
Unbelievable performance from Spurs, and to be there must have been something quite special, Jonathan. It really felt like a coming-of-age performance, not just for Tottenham Hotspur, but for Dele Alli as well.
Yeah, well, Dele Alli, having returned from a three-game European ban, not a greatest start to the season for him. A lot of doubts about whether he could lift his level against that top-class opposition. But, he really showed that last night. I mean, two goals, but also it was the dynamism, it was the movement, it was the intelligence, it was the way he almost kind of picked Real apart.
Yeah, it was special performance from Spurs. I suppose at the other end of the spectrum, Jonathan, we have Manchester United as far as team performances are concerned and Jose Mourinho. I started this podcast by asking the question of whether Mourinho was killing Manchester United as a football club. I think there was a feeling in some quarters that when Mourinho arrived at Old Trafford, Jonathan, after the disappointing spells of David Moyes and Louis van Gaal, he was going to bend to the will of the people and change his philosophy and bring back the swashbuckling days of Sir Alex Ferguson. But that clearly hasn't happened. If anything, it's gone the other way.
Well, last season his first season was the season of the 1-1 draw and the 0-0 draw and these interminable Old Trafford displays where they just couldn't seem to break down inferior opposition. The goals seem to be coming this season, certainly a lot more freely than they did last season. But the United fans who, I suppose, were hoping that he would kind of adhere to the United philosophy have learned that Mourinho doesn't really have a philosophy. I mean, I've been quite critical of Mourinho in the past, but the major difference, I think, between him and some of his contemporaries in the Premier League is that he's very much all about result. He's a pragmatist, and we saw that against Liverpool at Anfield. We saw that against Spurs the previous Saturday. He's banking, I think, on result bailing out any criticisms of his style of play, which, you know, in certain games hasn't been that bad. And it's important to remember that Sir Alex Ferguson himself was quite prepared to shut up shop when he needed to and get a result. So that's the gamble that Mourinho has taken. If he's, you know, instilling the title race in about February or March or April and possibly pick up one of the cups, possibly have a run in the Champions League, I think he'll bank on the fact that the success that he's brought to United in his two seasons will outweigh any criticisms of his philosophy or lack of it.
And Derek, just to bring you in here, do you think that Manchester United fans will be looking at the other side of the city enviously, because Pep Guardiola, he's got his team. They concede a few goals, but they score plenty.
Well, that's it. It's City's swashbuckling style, which is making Mourinho's style look even worse, isn't it? I mean, to appoint Mourinho, you knew what you were going to get. To actually appoint him and expect him to foster attacking football, well, it's just naivety gone mad. We knew what we were going to get from him because we've seen it at all the clubs he's been at. And we're certainly getting it now. But you've got to remember there's a lot more to United than long balls this season. There's long throws too and long stretches of boredom. They reserve the loudest cheer for the full-time whistle at Old Trafford these days. Yeah, he's getting results. And right now, I suppose, the opprobrium that he should be getting is being held back because they are getting results. But this is not a vintage United team. And they won't be getting results as the season goes on because they're not good enough, basically. He has turned Paul Pogba into Paul Parker. And he's turned the Theatre of Dreams, well, last season anyway, into the Theatre of Draws. Now, there are two lines I've used before, Dave, as you know, and I will continue to use them until someone has the decency to steal them.
I think, Jonathan, just to pick up on something Derek just made mention of there, how it was folly to expect Mourinho to change. I think it's you wrote a piece about Henrik Mkhitaryan during the week and how he's been stifled under Mourinho. And it's not just him, is it? He's managed to recruit players that had all that attacking intent with their former clubs, and it's not being replicated at Manchester United now. He seems to change the style in which players play under him.
He certainly fitted players into the system that I think he's predetermined that he wants them to play in. If you look at all the money they spent on players like Martial, 50-odd million, Henrik Mkhitaryan, I think it was 26 million. They brought Ibrahimovic in on massive wages. They got Lukaku in for 70-odd million. This is a galaxy of attacking talent that, given free rein, could run riot. But the way that Mourinho likes to play the game is he wants them all to do a defensive shift. I mean, Pogba came to United and people expected him to run the midfield. The fact is that at United, that's not really a role that exists. In big games, certainly, Mourinho doesn't like his centre-backs playing out into midfield. So Pogba's just simply not getting the ball in those areas. And he's been getting the ball a lot further up the pitch against lesser teams in the early part of the season. But now he's injured and Mkhitaryan is essentially being employed as an attacking defensive midfielder. It's really hard to see where that flair and where that vigour is going to come from.
That's Manchester United and their performances under Jose Mourinho. I want to finish this by talking about Troy Deeney and his ban for the handbags against Stoke last weekend. And I want to go back to a time when it was okay to make a challenge with 2 feet off the ground as long as you've got the ball. And even then, at its most severe, it was only a booking. I want you two chaps to give me past or present, although I'm pretty sure it's extinct nowadays anyway, but the three hardest men in football you've ever seen on television or live. Jonathan, kick us off. Who's your three hardest men in football?
Well, I'd probably have to go with Roy Keane. I think anybody who takes a player out and then gleefully admits to it in his autobiography afterwards has certainly not just got a vicious streak, but quite a vindictive one as well. I mean, he was a great player, Keane, but essentially the fact that he set out to physically intimidate opponents is no secret. I think it was kind of a weird source of pride to him. I was a little bit too young to watch Graham Souness play, but there are some fantastic YouTube compilations of Graham Souness essentially doing things that outside the milieu of a football pitch would probably get him arrested for common assault. A fray on a football pitch. I mean, he was, again, quite a player. But he had that side to him. In terms of, I want to go for someone slightly left field, and I want to say Ander Herrera, who's everybody thought when he came to United from Athletic Bilbao that he would be an incredibly cultured and significant, a sophisticated midfielder. But he's got he's got a slightly nasty streak to him as well. He's the king of the tactical foul. He's the king of the sneaky boot, little studs in the ankle. And so I think in today's sanitized modern game and all that, Herrera is kind of a worthy heir to the flame of Souness and Keane.
Love it. Thank you. Roy Keane, Graham Souness and Ander Herrera. What about you, Derek?
Well, I suppose in many lists, Vinnie Jones's name would be mentioned, wouldn't it? The Wimbledon crazy gang. I mean, that one of him grabbing Gazza's tackle is one of the best pictures ever, and it's certainly better than anything you made in Hollywood anyway. I know, because he used to own... He used to own several Greyhounds in the 90s, I think it was. When they were so easy to distinguish because they were the ones fouling the pavement. He'd be up in many lists, but he wouldn't be in mine. Souness would definitely be in my list. And not just because of what he did on the pitch. I mean, he was a dirty, no doubt about it, but he was a tremendous player as well. But what sticks in my mind is what he did when he was a manager in Turkey, when in that, the most ridiculous derby game of all, the two teams in Turkey, I can't remember who it was now. And he plants his team's flag in the opponent's half, and he nearly caused a civil war there. It's either foolishness gone mad or bravery gone to the extreme, but he's got to be in any list. Tommy Smith, maybe. I don't know if you two guys remember him from Liverpool in the 60s, right back for Liverpool in South Pole before. Reveled in the nickname of the Anfield Iron. I don't think anyone would revel in that nickname nowadays, but he'd be up there. And, of course, Duncan Ferguson of Everton. He was a true hard man on and off the pitch. The stories are legion of what I've heard about him. The most famous, I suppose, is when he caught two men trying to burgle his apartment. And I was working at the Mirror when that happened. And I said to them, just do this. This is the story you should write. Duncan Ferguson apprehended two men trying to burgle his apartment. Full stop.
they may live. Just leave it at that. They wouldn't take it up, but wouldn't that have been great? Wouldn't that have been the story of all time? So he'd be up there. Tommy Smith, Graeme Souness and Duncan Ferguson.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and after a couple of pretty bad weeks on the Knapp front, things have turned around a little bit for me recently, and I hope to keep that going this weekend by backing Barnsley at 8-5 to beat Birmingham City. Yes, Barnsley have only won one of their last five home games, and that was actually against Sunderland. And yeah, okay, Birmingham have improved under Steve Cotterill. But the fact is that Birmingham, away from home for years, even going as far back as Gary Rowett, do not travel well. They did get a 2-2 draw at Barnsley when they went to Oakwell last season, but they're a side I always want to oppose when they leave St Andrews. They've not scored in three of their last five away games, and while they have lost at some good sides, Norwich, Leeds when they were briefly good, and of course, always at Millwall, it's going to be tough. I don't think Birmingham City are worth backing here. I think Barnsley at 8-5 are great value. Despite no real good home wins recently, they of course have been scoring well away from home, and I think it's time for things to turn around on their own turf for Paul Heckingbottom. So Barnsley are 8-5, my nap of the weekend. Let's go to Gav Puszczalowski for a look at League One.
So League One has a weekend off, so my duty is to look at some League One sides ahead of round one of the FA Cup. And I'm going to give you three picks very quickly, all to win. All sides at home, put them together. It's an over 2-1 acca. Shout number one is Peterborough to win at home to Tranmere. Peterborough at home in the FA Cup have won 7 of 9 games and often scoring twos and twos and twos and fives and twos. So look at Peterborough to win, maybe even -1, -2. In 2013, Peterborough played at home to their opponents this weekend, Tranmere Rovers, and beat them by 5-0. Second shout is Bradford City at 2-5 to win at home to Chesterfield. Chesterfield are struggling right at the bottom of League Two, and all their efforts need to be escaping the relegation zone. Bradford at home, I think, will be too strong for Chesterfield, so Bradford are in there at 2-5. And next up is Shrewsbury at home to Aldershot Town. The last team to win at Shrewsbury in the FA Cup, Manchester United, all the way back in 2016 at the start of last year. Shrewsbury have actually won 4 of 6 games at home in the FA Cup, and they won't want the FA Cup upset of a defeat to Aldershot to affect their form and their morale in the camp. So Shrewsbury are in there at 4-9. So three League One sides, all to win in the FA Cup this weekend. Peterborough 8-13 to beat Tranmere. Bradford 2-5 to beat Chesterfield, and Shrewsbury 4-9 to win at home to Aldershot. That is over 2-1 acca.
For the early birds among you, Notts County on Friday night is a gift. 8-5 for the League Two leaders, who host a Bristol Rovers side on a drastic slide, failing to score in 5 of their last 6 away games. 4 league defeats, 1 win and a League Cup exit is not good preparation for an informed side who are only a few places down in the pyramid and have won 7 of the last 10 at home. Also worth noting, George Grant, 15-8 any time, is back among the goals thanks to their 3-0 midweek win. But I know a lot of you listen on a Friday night or a Saturday pre-match, and I've not forgotten you. The best acca shout of the weekend is 4-11 on Blackburn. 7th in League One against a Barnet side who've lost 7, drawn 4 in their last 11 and are hapless on the road. Including the trophy penalty defeat at Luton, it is 5 straight losses, and yet they've scored in each of their last 7 away games. In fact, both teams to score has landed in 13 of Barnet's last 14 matches. There were 4 1-0 scorelines in a row back in August, so the fact their season average is 2.7 goals a game shows the big difference since then. And yes, Blackburn aren't big on goals, but they do punish carelessness, and that is Barnet's defence in a nutshell. League 2 strike forces have knocked 13 past Barnet in those last 5 away defeats, so 19-20 for Blackburn and over 2.5 goals, or the riskier Blackburn and both teams to score price of 21-10, they are tempting. But if you are an early bird, the tastiest worm for the nap this week is that Notts County shout on Friday at 8-5.
It's a travesty that neither Jonathan or Derek mentioned Patrick Vieira, surely one of the hardest men ever in the world of football. Anyway, that's it for the Punt podcast this week. Thank you to everyone that's contributed, including Jonathan Liu, the Independent's chief sports writer, and of course Derek McGovern and Andy Excel, regulars on the Punt podcast. Gav Pushlowski, Pete Farris, Al Ross and Sam Norris all gave their best bets as well. But most importantly, thank you to you for listening to the Punt podcast. Make sure you download this via iTunes. Just type in The Punt, and that's the way you will get us on audioboom.com as well. And if you're having a bet on any of the football this week, check out the latest offers with William Hill by going to sports.williamhill.com. And enjoy your betting, folks. Should be a good weekend of sporting action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.